sense, correct, Your Honor.
Not just in a sense, the school didn't follow its procedures. Its employee, for reasons we are unable to discern from the record, because we have no information about the particular intern employee, that person put the complaint in a file, and it wasn't found by in-house counsel.
If I could back up a second, there are two errors or two circumstances which caused the failure to answer. The first is the failure of the assistant general counsel to receive the electronic notification of the fact of service. The second is the mistake by the summer intern. The procedures would involve taking the complaint, noting it in a litigation tracking report, sending it to outside counsel. Those procedures couldn't be followed because they got derailed at the start.
But the question is, since the school itself made the error, how do we raise that to the level of excusable neglect?
Well, Your Honor, I believe you're articulating the argument which plaintiff's counsel made in the trial court, which is...
No, I'm just asking the question. I mean, from our perspective, with a view to trying to help you out in this case, how can we possibly make that internal mistake excusable neglect when all the cases involving excusable neglect deal with unanticipated third-party interference or instances where there's a problem that was unexpected and without any fault on the part of the person who's supposed to make the filing, they're unable to make the filing?
In Buck Miller, the Supreme Court said that even if the error is by the defendant himself, it can still be excusable neglect. The trial court here relied upon a case called Weeks versus Segala. In Weeks versus Segala, the Court of Appeals had said, if the mistake is by an employee of the defendant, it's your own mistake, it can't be excused. Supreme Court in Buck Miller said, no, that's not correct. Even if you make the mistake, it can still be excusable neglect, depending upon the nature of the mistake.
And pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Mead, but to go back to Judge Graham's question, when you have a situation where an intern basically puts an important document in a file, doesn't let anybody know it's there apparently, misfiles it, that strikes me as carelessness. And if that's indeed carelessness, then that kind of mistake doesn't fall under our description of excusable neglect, does it?
I agree that carelessness does not constitute excusable neglect, but I don't think that the summer intern was being careless here. He was being very careful. He took the complaint, he took a file folder, he labeled it Spinoza, he took the file folder, he put it in a file cabinet alphabetically where it could be found if you want to look for it. He was trying to be careful, he just did the wrong thing.
Was there any carelessness in the training or supervision of the intern, though?
The intern was not involved in the kind of complex action which requires extensive training or supervision, basically delivering the mail and filing documents. He just got the two roles crisscrossed. Excuse me a second, my mouth has gone dry. Sorry, back with you. I was trying to go back to Judge Graham's question. Your question to me sounds like you're saying if an employee of the defendant makes a mistake, it can't be excused.
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, Buck Miller said, and I'm quoting from Buck Miller, the degree of negligence attributable to the client is only one factor for a court to consider in determining whether to set aside an order or judgment on the grounds of excusable neglect predicated on the gross negligence of the client's attorney. There's no gross negligence of the school's attorney here, is there?
Well, the mistake is in the legal department. We have the legal department making a mistake.
But I thought the counsel here is taking the position that counsel never knew that there was a complaint.
The attorneys at the top of the legal department, responsible for filing an answer, did not know that a complaint had been served. But the mistake underlying it all, one of the mistakes, was within the legal department.
But even you yourself, Mr. Mead, you characterized the activities of the intern as being careful and deliberate. And I guess I'm not hearing gross negligence here.
True. Correct. We have an innocent mistake, and we have a failure to give electronic notice.
And thus, Mr. Mead, not to put too fine a point on it, if you don't have gross negligence, this case doesn't fall under Buckmiller, because that's what Buckmiller talks about, the gross negligence of a lawyer. Then we take Buckmiller off the table, and we look at what remains. I understand and I accept your argument that you say that the intern here was careful and not careless. But nonetheless, isn't the trial court allowed to perceive and analyze these circumstances as indicating that the intern was careless? And if not the intern, perhaps the employer was careless in not making sure that the intern was appropriately trained so this document would get into the hands of the lawyers?
I believe it would be a stretch to call what the intern did, or characterize what the intern did, as being careless. Because as I said, the intern was obviously trying to be careful, taking a file, labeling it, putting it in the right place alphabetically. And again, what the intern was doing doesn't require extensive supervision or training, delivering the mail and sorting documents. This is a vocational school. They want to give students practical experience in the workplace. They employ a summer intern. But it doesn't take, it's not rocket science. It's just a simple mistake, which can happen in any organization. You could take the best law firm in the world with the best training and supervision, and somebody can make a simple mistake which causes a failure to answer. Every corporation, every law firm, even courts hire summer interns, and despite the best training and supervision, mistakes can happen. We can't rule out human error in this universe. We can try to reduce it, but you just can't eliminate it. Mistakes will occur, and when they're innocent and cause substantial problems, they should be excused. When in addition, half the problem was the failure to receive the email notice from the agent for service of process. That mistake was totally not within the school's control. Had either of those things gone correctly, the answer would have been filed. But you have a situation where you have two parallel tracks to ensure the complaints are answered, and both tracks fail simultaneously for independent reasons. That's got to be extremely rare. And given the size of the judgment, and given the principle that motions to set aside default should be liberally construed in favor of trial, it should come down the side of excusable neglect. Any further questions? I'll save the remainder for rebuttal. Thank you.
You have just under 5 minutes.
Thank you.
If it pleases the court, Stephen Silverne for the plaintiff appellee, Ms. Spinoza, number 5988. With me is Thomas Bulger, 29390, who handled most of the work and a good part of the briefing at the trial level and here. Judge Crabtree did not err. He did not regard his conscience, as appellate asserts at the close of its reply brief. His order is conscientious, thorough, conscionable, supported by the evidence, and a very reasonable exercise of judicial discretion and factual discretion, and correct. Really, to reverse the district court in this case would be to vitiate the requirement of clear, strong, and satisfactory standard of proof, which was recently confirmed in the Borer case by our Supreme Court, the abuse of discretion standard would be meaningless, effectively. The requirement to timely answer complaints would be toothless. To reverse it would be necessary to negate the well-established and recently reconfirmed principle that a party's common carelessness and negligence does not amount to excusable neglect. That's almost definitional, isn't it? Excusable neglect is defined as a party who acts as a reasonably prudent person, but nevertheless is unable to meet the deadline. Negligence is the opposite. The reliance on footnote 2 in Buck-Miller by appellant is off for exactly the reason you pointed out. The exception, I think it's essentially a causation analysis. Mrs. Buck-Miller was hospitalized. The immediate cause of the dismissal in Buck-Miller was when her lawyer failed to respond to a 30-day notice from the court while she was in fact hospitalized. Evidently there was some indication in the record of negligence on Mrs. Buck-Miller's part, and as you pointed out, the footnote very carefully limits that exception to situations where counsel is grossly negligent. I think it's important to note that the defendant did not argue gross negligence by counsel to Judge Crabtree. I don't think that position was taken actually until their reply brief before this court. And I think, as your questions indicate, it certainly was a sensible exercise of discretion for Judge Crabtree to find that clear, strong, satisfactory proof of excusable neglect was not shown here. For some of the reasons you mentioned, there was no discussion really in the Calhoun affidavit about the company's procedures before Mr. Calhoun would look at a complaint, get it stamped, and processed. The only indication was the email where Mr. Calhoun indicated that he found no record of having received the email from the registered agent. First of all, that's not a categorical denial that it was sent, or indeed a categorical denial that it was ever received. And also significantly, and I'm afraid the case is not briefed, the case that Judge Rothenberg decided some time back, the well, I just jotted down the case, excuse me. Your Honor, it's the Brown Grain case at 878 P. 2nd 157, a decision of this court from 1994. The holding was that the knowledge of an agent for service is the knowledge of the corporation. The corporation bears the risk when it uses an agent for service that handles litigation for many corporations. They take their chances with that. So it's both legally and factually insufficient to establish anything remotely resembling excusable neglect.
Would it have made any difference if they had included more detail in the affidavit, such as the intern's name or other details?
It might have, depending on what was asserted, I suppose. Although it's actually kind of difficult to envision a set of facts that would amount to excusable neglect by a party where there's no intervening cause between the party's mistake or I should say negligent and careless error and the failure to meet the deadline. This is not Buck-Miller. This is not any of the cases where the appellate courts have chosen to reverse a trial court for an abuse of discretion. And it's important to note that Judge Crabtree had discretion both regarding whether to find excusable neglect by clear and convincing proof that was presented to him, and he had discretion, judicial discretion, to determine if substantial justice would be served or not by taking away the default judgment.
Mr. Silvern, would you spend a minute or so discussing whether or not counsel for the school had made an appearance in this case?
The answer to that question is clearly no. There was no communication with the court by counsel for defendant. And in fact, the interactions between Mr. Bulger on behalf of Ms. Spinoza and the representatives of the defendant, the defendant acted badly, essentially, and refused even to turn over the recorded statement that Ms. Spinoza had given to them before she had a lawyer. And the last communication from Mr. Bulger on her behalf was, Ms. Spinoza is going to sue you.
Would it have made a difference if counsel had, in effect, given discovery in the case before the complaint was filed? Discovery in a generic sense.
I'm not quite sure what you're referring to, but in terms of exchanging information, the school declined to provide any information. Ms. Spinoza had given medical records and so on, hoping to settle the case pre-filing.
Would you see a difference had the school cooperated and worked toward a resolution of the case by giving documents in its files? Would that amount to an entry of appearance?
No, there has to be communication with the court under Colorado law. That's well established. That was reconfirmed as recently as the Plaza del Lago case that this court decided in, I think, 04, 06. You must communicate with the court to be entitled to notice, which I assume is where your question is leading. And the defendant got all the notice it's entitled to in the summons, which does indicate if you fail to answer or otherwise respond, judgment by default may be entered against you. So they had notice. There's no due process issue here. They also had plenty of process in filing their 60B and attempting to get it set aside. Honestly, it's somewhat surprising that that this kind of effort would be made to criticize an attempt to set aside of one of the better trial court orders I've ever seen. Judge Crabtree was terribly thorough, and I'd like to leave you with one thought. The Wagner case, Judge Crabtree cited Weeks early in his analysis for the general principle, which has been reconfirmed in Weisbard by the Supreme Court much later in 01, for the general principle that a party's own negligence is unequal to excusable neglect. The Wagner case, which is briefed, involved in-house counsel's failure to meet a deadline, and that was not reversed in Buckmiller for good reason. So they're really, this is not a close case, and it is really essential that Judge Crabtree be affirmed. Were there any other issues or difficulties or thoughts that might be helpful to talk about? See, we covered notice, clear, strong, and satisfactory. There was a three-factor argument, but Judge Crabtree went on for, I think, over a page discussing the other two elements of Craig and Buckmiller, and it's very clear he need not have made decisions on all three because this was nowhere near clear proof of excusable neglect. Essentially, appellee is arguing for a clerical exception. And basically, you'd have to find that any clerical error, no matter what it is, no matter how little information the defendant chooses to give the court about the nature of the error, justifies reversing what was a perfectly sensible exercise of discretion. So please affirm. There's really no alternative to affirming, is there?
Thank you. Mr. Mead?
I'll try to address 4 points. Counsel said that excusable neglect occurs when the defendant is acting as a reasonably prudent person and circumstances cause the defendant to miss a deadline. Well, the school here was trying to act as a reasonably careful corporation. They had established procedures, their procedures were derailed, but they were trying to do the right thing. And back to the point about excusable neglect or errors by the party itself, in Singh versus Mortensen, the defendant was served with the complaint. So disgusted, he throws the complaint out, the papers out in the street. No answer is filed. Trial court says, that's not excusable neglect. This court says, wait a second, let's look at all the factors, consider the entire picture. This man was sued by the man who had raped his daughter. Of course he'd be disgusted. Natural human reaction, consider the circumstances. It was his own mistake, nobody else's mistake. But this court ruled that that was excusable neglect. Counsel several times said that the school refused to produce the recorded statement. That's not true. They never asked the school for the recorded statement. They asked the insurance company for the recorded statement. The insurance company declined on work product grounds. About the same time, counsel for the school contacted plaintiff's counsel and said, here I am, I represent the school. They never asked counsel for the school for the recorded statement. Once counsel has made contact, the ethical obligation says you talk only to counsel, nobody else. So there's no question about talking to the insurer or the school. They knew who the counsel was. If they want the recorded statement, just ask him. And there was a conversation on the phone, and it didn't happen. About the appearance issue, the rule says appeared in the action. It doesn't say appeared in the court. An action encompasses a lot of activities outside the courtroom, depositions, interrogatories, admissions, and so on. You can appear in an action many ways without appearing in the court. And it's the defendant who does not know that an action is filed who needs the notice. If you don't know an action is filed, you're never going to make an appearance in the court. Once you've made an appearance in court, you've got your notice. It's okay. About the Wagner case involving in-house counsel, the attorney in the Wagner case was both an attorney and an officer for the corporation. He was secretary of the corporation in the high-level sense of secretary. And the Court of Appeals said, well, that's both party and attorney, therefore we can't excuse it. Exactly what Buck Miller says, no, even if it is the party, we can't excuse it.
Ms. Mead, I've got one question about your use of the Singh case, if I may. There, the court said, the completely anticipated emotional reaction of Mr. Singh was excusable neglect, basically brought on by something he did not anticipate, being sued in this regard by a man who had raped his daughter. Are you saying that the clerk's action here is the same kind of unanticipated event?
Other way around, I'm saying the clerk's action here is, in the broad sense, the same kind of expected human behavior. In Singh versus Mortensen, this court said, natural human reaction to that situation is to be disgusted. And if you're disgusted, you might throw your complaint away and not answer. Look at the whole circumstances. And in the entire picture, it was a natural human reaction. Here, the natural human environment in a corporation, despite the best efforts for training and supervision, will be an occasional mistake.
Doesn't that read the whole carelessness analysis that this court and our Supreme Court have gone through repeatedly completely out of the picture?
I don't think so, Your Honor. No. It's not carelessness, as 30 or 40 of the cases I cite in the opening brief, reply brief indicate. When you have procedures that are designed to ensure that complaints are answered, but something innocent, natural, unavoidable happens. You're trying to be careful, but an occasional mistake will occur. That doesn't mean you're being careless. You're not disregarding the judicial system. You're doing the best you can in a human environment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to both counsel for your fine arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.